Gordita Crunch.
Did you just call me Gordita Crunch? Excellent. Matt knows about that. Is this thing on? In the back, you can hear me, no? Excellent. My name is Julio. I'm an alcoholic. I have alcoholism. I'm grateful to be here tonight. I'm grateful to share my experience, strength, and hope. And I want to thank you guys for letting me come down and share my story with you. I want to thank Fernando for sending me some very nice text messages wishing me good luck before I got started tonight. Oh, fucker. I never know how to start these things out, you know? You got to ask, and then you're in this big, you know, room, and there's all these nice people here, and I'm just supposed to just unload and just get honest automatically, and I'm totally willing to do that. I just don't know exactly how I want to shuffle this. I had a great week, you know? I look at this meeting, and I think of it as the, how should I say it, like the end of my week, you know? I'm kind of boring now in my years of sobriety. The things I look forward to are sort of like normal. Like it's really weird. I'm slowly turning into that guy that wakes up and I have a glass of orange juice while I watch TV, you know? I'm turning into that guy slowly but surely. The promises, right? What I mean by that is, I mean to say this. I had a tremendous week in terms of Alcoholics Anonymous and in terms of my sobriety. It started out with this meeting last week, right? And I wasn't here, which was nice. Nice little break from the notorious B.I.G. Thank you. Sunday, I had a terrific you guys got that, right? Sunday, I had a terrific conversation with an alcoholic, and I think I feel safe in saying my favorite thing to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, I swear to God, is have conversations with people. You know, I don't know what it is. I'm weird like that. You know, I love having conversations with people. If you give me a double espresso and good eye contact, a good story, a good moment, I swear to God, I will let you spill your entire guts to me. And I love it. I love being in the zone, you know? Like, I love having good conversations with people. I love, like, staying on track and really getting a feel for, you know, what people want to tell me and you know, I don't know, like, and it actually goes back to, like, you know, when you guys, like, clapped just now, right? There was a while in my sobriety where I didn't really know how to deal with that, and the cliche is, like, I didn't know how to deal with, you know, people accepting me and people treating me nicely, and I think the fear behind that was, if you knew who I actually was, you know, if you knew the kind of person that I was, if you knew the depths that I would go through to fuck you over, you wouldn't be clapping for me. It would be far from that. You'd be cursing me. So to have those like quiet moments in the conversation, it was nice. It was a conversation with a gentleman whose name I won't mention, obviously. And he went out and he came back and we had a really wonderful conversation about what sobriety means to him and what it means to me and to find common ground in that. You know, I'm here tonight because of some of the conversations that saved my life. You know, and people who really wanted to get to know me really fast and they wanted to, you know, see what the common ground was, and they wanted to determine what it was that was going to help me and the types of actions that I can take and how I can get honest as quickly as possible. I'm aware that there's no topic for tonight, but I'm kind of cliche, and I'm going to go a little bit on honesty. I also had a chance to represent Never Had a Legal Drink for the renewed commitment for the Karen Foundation for the doctors. That was a treat. You know, I went with you know, some of the guys there in the row, I won't point them out, I'll just look at them very awkwardly. It was phenomenal, man. Like, all these doctors were asking us questions. There was, like, one or two who, like, I think didn't really give a shit. Do you guys feel safe in saying that? There's, like, you know, and that's expected, right? Like, there's always that person in the back of the meeting that's just, like, doing his or her own thing. But some of these doctors really wanted to know what it is about alcoholism that they can't figure out. And they were really interested to know some of the insights that we had, and I thought it was super cool to show up and be of service to that and to be accountable for that. And I think I speak for the other guys in this room that I was with when I say it was a real privilege and it was a real treat, you know. And then there's today, earlier today. The weather got nice, right? And my grandfather, who is about 89, decides to call me up while I'm in class, and he says, I need a haircut. And I say, listen, I'm in class. And he goes, I don't give a shit, Papi. I want a haircut. And when Abuelo wants a haircut, he's got to get his haircut. You know, he has, like, no hair on his head. I don't understand the point of it. But I said, okay, let's go. Let's take my Honda Civic and we'll go get you your haircut, man. And I love my grandfather. I love my grandmother. I love my family. Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to show up for my family. You know, during the later years of my sobriety, and by later I mean when I came back to New Jersey, which is my home, which is where I live, I always wondered if it was the right decision in my sobriety. I left my whole network in Los Angeles and the whole way of life that I had. And I found out that you can practice your program anywhere you want, anywhere in the world. And I'm sure there's people here tonight that can tell me their own personal stories and their own personal accounts from that. And I've been to meetings all over. But anyway, it came a time in my sobriety when I had to really reevaluate why it is that we do what we do, because it sort of lost meaning for me. When I wasn't able to put the old faces that brought me such joy, and I had to come back here and reintroduce myself to everybody and really start from scratch again, I lost a lot of meaning behind that, and that's a dangerous spot to be. A lot of the old fears came back, you know, including the fears that I just told you, right? A fear of not being understood, a fear of not being accepted, because God forbid you knew who I really was. And the only thing I can tell you is that I kept my honesty and I kept my integrity, right? Like, I did the right thing when no one was looking, but that's really all I had. And I felt really lonely, you know? And this is like 4 or 5 years of sobriety when supposedly I thought that that wasn't supposed to happen. I thought that you get sober, your life becomes automatically amazing. And to a certain extent, I actually have to tell you, that is true. You just have to put in the work to fulfill that. It can be a reality. That's the reality that I have today in my life. When I say it's a privilege to speak here tonight, it's because it is the reality, right? Like, I'm not up here to talk about what a piece of shit this program is. I'm here to talk about how wonderful Alcoholics Anonymous is. But, so I started from scratch, and by that I mean I showed up for my family. You know, my grandfather, who's dying, and he can go any minute now. I showed up for him. I cooked for him. It's getting to the point where I think I'm going to actually have to shave him. Just the face. I felt like I should clarify that before people get kind of crazy. You know, I cook for them. I show up at my grandparents' house. I pretend like I like what they're cooking. I mentioned this before in some of my shares. I know I shared here recently for the anniversary I took. My sobriety date, by the way, is January 14th, 2007, before I forget to say that. And since I didn't forget to say that, I forgot what I was just talking about. My grandfather, excellent. I got my motto from him. I got my lifestyle from AA, but my motto from him that I got was, life is just one good meal after another. That's been the case for me since January 14, 2007. I don't know, it's a trip. Like, I have so many things that I want to say about this journey that it's been, especially like the later years of my sobriety, but I do want to let you guys know what it was like. So I should probably start with what I've never actually talked about in a meeting before, which is my childhood. I didn't want to actually talk about that. But it is important, and there is some relevance when I think about it. So I was born, obviously, in New Jersey. My parents are Cuban. And that really doesn't matter as much as to say that that generation that came in the 50s, super paranoid, you know? Like, and they have the same American dream that everyone else has, you know? It's the idea of exceptionalism and hard work. But beneath that, there was this idea that at any moment, you can get fucked over. You can get fucked over pretty bad. So my father was the sort of epicenter of anxiety. And for years, I didn't really realize it until I was like, really like a year or 2 years sober, how emotionally fucking constipated I was, you know? Like, I was just not able to like let go, you know? I had this idea that in order to really mask my fears, I had to come up with multiple obsessions. You know, just to sort of like blot everything out, you know. I came in here and I swear to God I needed to stick my head in the toilet and just flush it for like a complete fucking year. All right, so I'm a big fan of stories, so I'm going to mention a story that I think some people have heard before. I'm looking at you, I think you've heard this. So when I had to go to school as a kid during grade school, and there's a couple reasons I mention this story. It's sort of like killing two birds with one stone. I had two sisters, and my father would drop us all off at the same school that we went to. It was like one of those neighborhood Catholic schools. And my two sisters were real go-getters, you know. Like, I could have told you then that they were going to be, you know, a lawyer or, you know, graduate from with a PhD and all that good stuff. Me, I was sort of like jerk from day one, right? I was sitting in the back seat and I was just like, you know, goofing off. I was like yelling at people out the window and shit. My dad thought it was hilarious. So my dad would drop my two sisters off. They would go ahead and go to school and they would walk side by side real nice. You know, they looked literally like they were built for this shit. And me and my dad knew the deal. I was supposed to get out of the back seat, head into the front seat, and he would pass me the newspaper, and I was to read it to him while he would drive for an espresso. Thank God this is not Caffeine Anonymous. I would have a very, very long story if that was the case. But anyway, so I was drinking espressos since I was like six. I swear to God. But anyway, so he would play like the salsa music that I couldn't understand, and I was supposed to read louder than the music was, which I never really understood at the time. And this was like 1996, so like Bill Clinton made it. I'll never forget this. Bill Clinton was like on the front page every day, and I would have to read this shit to him, and it was really annoying. And we would pass by, like, no joke, 15 different coffee shops, and I was like, why the fuck, you know, are we driving this far to go to like this end of the town? We grew up in a nice part of what, you know, is sort of known as like a bad town. I'm looking at Fernando again, that fucking guy. He would always drive there, and he like wouldn't explain his method, and that really pissed me off. And when we get there, I knew what the time was. It was a place called La Palmita. I'll never forget it. And in that place, he would find not very well-to-do people. You know what I'm saying? It was sort of like you got you guys with the construction crew that was going to head out to Home Depot. You would find like what you were sure were prostitutes and ex-prostitutes. You would find police officers talking to the people they just arrested. This was kind of the crowd at La Palmita. And my father used to love introducing me to people. And he used to be like, hey, this is my son, Julio. My name's Julio, too. Go figure. And I was supposed to, you know, respond, and people would say these really emphatic things in Spanish, and I didn't speak Spanish at the time. So this is why I mentioned this story. That was actually the first time I knew that I felt like shit when I couldn't relate to people. You know, it was that exact moment. And they would say, like, you know, this punchline, because they always speak in fucking punchlines, you know, at this place. And they would say, like, this real cool, like, hip, slick, and metaphor. And they would have the punchline. They'd be like, uh-huh. And then they would look at me, and I'd be like, no, you know. I didn't know what to do, you know. I was so nervous. I was so scared. And I was like this little kid looking up at, like, this big dude with his G-chain. And I'd be like, huh? I didn't know what to do. What that looks like in a split second is everybody wants to get to know me. Everybody wants to say hi to me. Supposedly I'm in. It's sort of a guarantee of, you know, this social networking. And yet, I don't want to be there. And I'm super uncomfortable. And I'm not talking about, you know, like some light sweating and like some nervousness and like looking down the ground. I'm talking about, you know, really depressing shit. Like since I was little, like I knew automatically I was not going to be able to, no matter how hard I tried, to relate to these people that I was told I should automatically assume a good relation with, you know, and that was fucking crushing. Everything up until then is what I fondly refer to as the special period, because I was a class clown. I could make anybody laugh if I wanted to. I had what some people called the gift of gab, but in this specific environment, what a crushing defeat, you know? And I don't think that's too hard of a stretch to say that nobody can relate to that. I think it's somebody everybody can relate to, you know? I don't know if I was born with alcoholism, but by the time I came in here, I should probably say I put together a terrific fucking resume for you guys. I mentioned that story for another reason, too. One time I was reading the newspaper for my dad, you know? And by the way, we went to this happened. This was like the daily ritual, that feeling like shit at La Palmita. Fuck that place. I went there like last year just to like peek in and see if I knew anybody. Like, I'm ready to fucking say hi now. Maybe like 2 months later, I found out in the newspaper that I first read the words Alcoholics Anonymous. It was like a local politician whose name I obviously, you know, can't say out here. But my dad said, I know that guy. He's a good guy. He's in AA. And I said, what the fuck is AA? You know, what the hell is that? I didn't know what AA is, you know. It's funny that, like, I got that weird informal introduction then. I had no idea what Alcoholics Anonymous was. I hear what some people's, you know, takes on it is, and I feel like it's a rite of passage in qualifications to mention that little funny anecdote. I thought Alcoholics Anonymous was a place where Vietnam veterans come, and they drop their wives off at bingo, and they come over to Alcoholics Anonymous to drink. I also thought it was a place where maybe at best it was like, you know, a couple of ex Knights of Columbus members, you know, maybe they thought of like, hey, maybe we can come up with another group with a really fucking ambiguous name. That's what I thought Alcoholics Anonymous was. I had no idea you can come in here and literally experience a second shot at life. I had no idea that you can change everything. I had no idea that you can pick up what we call the keys to the kingdom. I had no idea about that. That didn't make any sense to me. I know that sounds corny. I have 10 minutes. Excellent. I got to rush. Okay, I know that sounds corny, but those are the words that I stand behind. I built a life based on those principles. You know, I built a life on, again, some of those connections that I made, even with my grandfather, even people outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know. Something happened, and in high school, I just started fucking drinking and using. There's only so much of that kind of environment that I can take. There's only so much of like not wanting the people to know who I was, so I would have to give them and like feel like I was walking on a tightrope to balance out, you know, how I wanted you to perceive me, so this way I can project some sort of like good relationships in the future, because that's what I needed to fall asleep. It was that bad. So I started drinking and using, and you know, it was fun, and then it was fun with problems, and then it was just problems. High school for me was like a black market for drugs, man, and alcohol. It was great. You know what's funny? Now that I just remembered this. You know, I saw my high school bully at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I just remembered this. I have to tell this story real quick before I forget. So I see this guy, right? He used to fucking torment me, man. This guy was such a... Never mind. I won't get into it. This guy was terrible. This guy was so nasty, man. And I can't believe I saw him at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And I was just finished making, like, you know, I had like a stack of amends and I made so many of them. I got it down like this. So I was like on fire when I saw this guy. What a treat, you know? He was like, I got a DUI. I was like, that's fucking great, man. I was like, that's fucking great. So you're going to stay with us, huh? He was like, I don't know, man. I don't know about that. But it's good to see you. I was like, yeah, shithead. Good to see you too. I enjoyed my drinking. I wouldn't be here obviously I would be here because I didn't, but there was a while where I very much enjoyed my drinking. I read the promises sometimes, and I honestly can relate to that as my drinking, right? Like the minute I took a drink, and I couldn't believe it tasted that way. You know, I couldn't believe alcohol. I thought it was going to, you know, considering how many people, right, the epidemic of alcoholism, I thought it was going to taste like fucking liquid Snickers or something. Like, I didn't know it was going to taste like this sharp, like, burnt cigarette, you know, a yeast kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't know that. So I got into it, but I got into it anyway. I was like, well, let me try another one and see if this flavor works. You know what I'm saying? And then 30 beers later, I was like, I think I like this. This is good. You know, I like this. But I was a really bad drinker. There was years of my life where I don't remember literally very much. You know, there was years where I think all I remember was, you know, the classes where I failed. You know, like the last class that you have where you fail, like that was the one I was sober for because I would have to take like that final exam. I remember, I think in like 2004, I remember drinking, you know, tons of tequila and then being dragged out by my feet of a room. I remember like the guy had to like literally drag me out. I remember, you know, the first day of school, and I remember getting kicked out on the last day of school. I remember my mother coming to see me and she didn't recognize who I was because I lost about half my body weight. And that was so sad, you know, like a mother who can't relate to their son. So when I talk about family, it's a big deal to me to show up for them. My drinking was terrible. I'm a big storyteller. I like stories. I'm going to tell you guys a story about my drinking, then I'm going to move on. This was New Year's Eve in 2006. And again, my sobriety date is January 14, 2007. I didn't know that was going to be my date, by the way. But I remember I got to my dealer's house, and I took an unbelievable amount of, you know, dry goods, as we call them. And I remember, and it was the most piece of shit New Year's Eve, by the way. Like, you know, you would think, like, you know, tons of girls and everything. It was just, like, me, my dealer, and my friend Pat. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was it. And, like, his mom and his aunt were downstairs listening to, like, some salsa music, frying tostones, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was such a fucking nightmare. And I go upstairs, and I immediately, After I start tripping balls and everybody else is like passed out, I go to put a DVD on. I'm going to make this story quick because I know there's some other things I want to say. I go to put this DVD on. You guys remember that movie Snatch? It was a good movie, right? And I like to see movies that I've seen before, even when, you know, I'm going crazy. So I put this movie on, right? And you know when you see a DVD, you know how it loops over and over and over again, like the background menu? I put it on. I never pressed play. This is a good story. This is a good one. So 6 hours later, I still didn't realize that I didn't push play. And I'm watching this movie, and I said, man, this movie's fucking crazy. Dennis Farina is excellent, you know? And the moment comes where I had like a stream of consciousness when I did this, and also my friends who I thought were asleep were actually witnessing this entire thing. So this is why I'm able to reconstruct the story. So I said, coño, I don't think I pressed play on this. I need to get the remote. I need to push play. What the fuck am I doing? The sun's like hitting me, and I started this at like 1 a.m. What the fuck is happening? So I get up. I'm like, oh my God, where's the remote? Because I know I'm racing against time. You know what that feeling is like when you remember something? You're like, if I forget in 30 seconds, I'm going to forget about all this shit. I'm going to go back. I'm like, oh, shit. So I start patting my pockets. I'm like, as if I put the remote there. I was like, where the fuck is this remote? Holy shit. Oh, my God. Where the fuck is this remote? And then all of a sudden, I forget. And I'm standing up, and I'm like, what the fuck was I just doing? That's fucking weird. What the fuck? Why are these batteries in my hand? I was like, I can't eat these. Yeah, I had no idea what to do. So I sit back down. And I'm like, man, that was weird. Shit. You know? And I look up the TV and I'm like, oh, Snatch, I fucking love this movie. I was gone, man. They called me E-tard for a reason. And that's a funny story. I like to laugh, but you know, the alcoholism was very serious, and I want to make sure I touch up upon that. I failed out of college. I lost the girl of my dreams. You know, I couldn't hold a job. I was miserable, and I wanted to kill myself. You know, so I always want to make sure that alcoholism is a very serious disease. I've known people who killed themselves in these rooms, you know, and it's important that I reach out to something I call a higher power, and I did so on that date. Like I said, I didn't think it was going to be my time. I didn't think that was going to be my date, but it was. When people talk about the grace of God, I think that's what happened on that date. I didn't think I would ride it out for 8 years. In the beginning, for me, a lot of the solution was accountability. I was 20 when I got sober. I really did never have a legal drink. So for me, accountability was everything. When I talked about not knowing what the rules meant anymore, that didn't really apply when I was brand new. When I was brand new, my whole fucking world opened up. I wasn't going to die anymore. I had a whole new, you know, reason for being. My whole life opened up. You know, I never felt more alive in my life after that date. You know, some people call that a pink cloud, but it is what it is. You know, if you got to ride that, then so be it. You know, it's what comes after that you find that holds you over. If you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, welcome. I hope you, you know, sincerely find whatever it is that you need to stay here. But I remember coming in, and it was all about, you know, hitting meetings and calling people up and being of service to people and making sure I answered phone calls as much as I made them. When they talk about people who normally would not mix, besides Bendejo, the fucking high school bully, I also had you know, one of my first sponsors. He was morbidly obese. He was gay. He was black. He was from Missouri. And he's one of the first men that I can honestly say I absolutely love. I love that man. He was phenomenal. He was a great sponsor. And I remember he used to love to do step work in, like, fast food restaurants. So I would call him up about, like, you know, whatever drama I had. And he would be like, meet me at La Brea and Wilshire. This was Los Angeles. I would be like, okay, Burger King. Got it. And we would get there, and I'll never forget, he said, I was 2 years sober at the time, and he said, you just want to hug your inner child, don't you? And I didn't know what that meant at first. It took me so long to realize that. We come in here, and we talk about attraction rather than promotion. Nobody's ever spoken to me like that. I didn't know what that meant. But he really whipped me into shape. If I had to offer up some sort of take on that, when they talk about, you know, your life is so rich in Alcoholics Anonymous and the perception, my first spiritual experience, and I mention this a lot, you know, finding God for me was understanding that if I wanted to feel better, I was going to have to stop wanting to feel better. You know, like my feelings and my perceptions about something were not like really indicative of how I'm actually doing. You know, like I used when I felt good, I used when I felt bad, I used when I felt neutral. It didn't fucking matter. You know what I'm saying? If I wanted some results, I was going to have to put in the work. It just so happens to be that if I do the work and I find the results, I'm usually on the other side. And I'm always feeling so much better for that. You know, like it's very rare that I do the work in Alcoholics Anonymous and I don't feel so well. I'm so grateful to be here. I don't know if I have any much more to say. Jasmine just reminded me that my time is up. I think I had a lot more, but, you know, like I said, I'm very happy to be here. It's been a very grateful ride. That's all I got. Thank you.